name is Jeremy Blackwater.
And you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Jeremy Blackwater. I represent the appellant, DJL Jr., in the termination of parental rights appeal in this action. There are a number of issues raised in our brief. The main issue is reasonable efforts. As the court sees throughout the brief and throughout the court's order, reasonable efforts were not really applied towards my client, who was incarcerated for most of the CHIPS case.
I just want to make sure that I'm clear on the record. I could not find that there was ever a case plan for your client.
There was not.
And I can't find in the record that the department ever asked to be relieved of reasonable efforts.
They did not. I was not appointed during the CHIPS case. I was only appointed for the TPR, a portion of the case, because my client had not appeared during the CHIPS case because he was incarcerated for most of it. But in my review of the record through the CHIPS case, I have not found either of those things for my client.
Did your client respond in the CHIPS case?
Yes. So there were, as I pointed out in brief, and actually out of addendum 48 through 50, there are three letters sent to my client. The first letter, dated November 20th, 2018, asks my client to do a DNA test.
And he cooperated.
He cooperated and did the DNA test to prove he was the father. The second letter, December 13th, 2018, asks my client to do the family history's background study so they could see if there's any potential placement options for his family. He cooperated with that as well and returned that to the county. The third letter is dated January 3rd, 2019, where essentially they tell my client that there's nothing else they can do to help him while he's incarcerated. Let us know when you get out of jail. And while my client was in jail, he did not have the ability to reach out to family services. And when he was briefly released before being rearrested, he did not reach out to family services, although he should have. Had he had an attorney, perhaps he could have been advised that he needed to do that.
This case has some attributes that are consistent with another case that you and I are aware of, AMC, where you get an adjudicated father or a determined father, and he doesn't get counsel.
Very, very much so, yes. I am very aware of that, as you know. I would say the main difference in that case, that client was in the jail in that same town, so he was brought over for the hearing, so he was able to make that request for counsel. Bigstone doesn't have a jail, so they had to house Mr. Lindbergh elsewhere. For a portion of it, he was about 25 miles south of Lockhart County. Other times he was over in Kanawha County, typically within about an hour, hour and 15 minutes.
They have a jail out in the middle of the three counties or something, don't they?
That is a private prison.
Oh, that's private? Okay.
It's not used to house inmates right now.
Okay.
That'd be in Appleton.
Okay.
So at what part of the proceedings were you appointed?
As soon as he was served with the termination of parental rights paperwork.
And did you ask for a case plan?
At that time, we were simply coming on for about a month preparing for trial. I didn't really have time to meet with anyone to determine what services could be offered because we were starting to prepare for trial at that point.
It seemed like the filing of the TPR petition and the TPR trial happened relatively fast.
From when I came on, and I'm trying to go off memory on this, I didn't prepare for how long. I think it was about a month, maybe a month and a half, between me being appointed and the TPR trial. And there just wasn't a lot of time for me to work with regarding the light and work with family services to see if we could get some efforts started for my client. But unfortunately, at that point, it really was too late as they were preparing for the TPR trial as it had already been filed.
There and am I correct that there's nothing in this record where the court that indicates the court made a finding that it would be futile to provide any services in this case?
The court makes that finding in the TPR order. So retroactively trying to apply that, that's one of the points I wanted to get to. Minnesota Statute 260.012 Subdivision A, which is quoted on page 11 of my brief, says reasonable efforts are always required except upon a determination by the court that a petition has been filed. outstanding prima facie case that one of those seven delineated conditions exist. And those conditions don't exist in this case. Furthermore, there was never a request. Typically, the way I see that come down in my CHIPS case experience is the county asks the court during CHIPS case to relieve of efforts.
That seems to me to be what the plain language of the statute requires. That is a determination by the court.
I agree. And what we're seeing here in this case is a retroactive application that the efforts would have been futile. There was never, as far as I'm aware, there was never a request to be relieved of efforts, and there was never an order by the court. I reviewed all of the orders. Of course, I wasn't at the CHIPS hearing, so I didn't know whether there was a request or not. But the CHIPS orders do not have anything wherein the county's relieved of efforts. The county, in its TPR petition, did say that they believed egregious harm had been as alleged, and therefore efforts were required, because they said the child was found in a home of methamphetamine, and that's egregious harm to the child. But in its brief following the trial, they conceded that no egregious harm doesn't exist in this case. Then the county seems to shift their efforts from egregious harm as being a reason for no efforts to their futile.
Well, they abandoned the egregious harm.
He did, yes. But in his initial petition, TPR petition, that was alleged that reasonable efforts weren't required. Of course, at trial, the guardian ad litem testified that reasonable efforts were required in this case, and she was offered as an expert prior to that. So I would state that the only expert at trial agreed that reasonable efforts were required. And as far as the case plan that you'd start talking about, there was no case plan for father. On finding number 78 of the court's order, which is page 16 of the court order, it indicates the case plan was prepared by the county and signed by Ms. Koch on November 2018 following the motion hearing. The county did not include Mr. Lindberg in this plan. Likely, the reason that I see, and I don't know this for sure, I'm only posing hypothetical here, is because they never spoke to him. The main social worker in the case never once spoke to Mr. Lindberg. Her supervisor spoke to him at a hearing very briefly, but during her testimony, she couldn't really recall any of the details, but stated that she didn't think she talked about any of the efforts that would have been come forward in this case. At one point during the case, the primary social worker was on maternity leave and had another social worker kind of step in. She testified that she was about to send those letters to request services and wanted to, but never actually was able to do that. And of course, as the court knows, those services is what goes into the case plan. And it's really hard to create a case plan with someone if you never actually speak to them. And I would state that there was ample opportunity to speak to Mr. Lindberg to create a case plan and go over these services. He was brought to Big Stone County for multiple court hearings for criminal cases during this same time frame. The social workers testified they were present in the courtroom witnessing those same hearings, but they never actually went and spoke to him afterwards or before. Also, they very easily could have called the jail or went to visit him in the jail to start reaching out and start talking about what can we do to help you to make sure this case can go in a better direction. That was never done.
Could I ask you about the case of N. Ray R.W., because the judge seems to look at that case as a guide. And one thing in R.W., the Supreme Court there said that there was no case plan, and requiring a case plan would put an impossible burden on counties to provide services when the incarcerated person has chosen not to respond to a CHIPS petition despite being given the opportunity to do so. And they pointed out that this father didn't have much of a relationship with the children to start with, and that had little interest in reunification and made no effort to contact the children. How is this case distinguishable from that case? Or does RW control here?
Primarily, my client did respond. He was basically offered three things, three letters. Two of those, he adequately responded appropriately to and did exactly what he was asked of him. The third letter didn't ask him to do anything. When you go back and read the actual letter, it just says, in my own language, sorry, there's nothing we can do to help you. So it doesn't ask him to do anything. It's the only two things he's ever asked to do in this case, he does. And does it almost immediately without hesitation. So I would propose that he does respond. He doesn't attend hearings, but of course he's in custody. He can't walk over to the court to appear.
Well, could I ask you this? Because in this case, in your case, there was an OFP, right, prohibiting him from seeing the children?
Yes, and
yet the court makes a big point of saying he didn't try to have any contact with the children. Wouldn't any contact have been in violation of the OFP?
It would have been in violation of the OFP. And actually, my client, criminal conviction that he had arrested for in the middle of the case was for violating the OFP and having contact.
Well, because he did visit with the child every other week at a local park, right? Kind of arranged by family, as I understand it.
It wasn't the typical visit that you would see from a husband or ex-husband, ex-wife, where you're seeing every other weekend. Here, take the kid for the weekend so I can go shopping, get groceries, things like that. It wasn't that kind of visit, but there were some sporadic visits in there. And again, during the majority of this case, he was incarcerated. People aren't going to want to, understandably so, you're not going to want to bring a child of this age into the jail to visit the father. I think it would be fairly unreasonable to request this child be brought into the jail to visit his dad at this age.
But
when the kid's a little bit older, you might be able to.
But as I understand the court's order, though, doesn't it kind of put your client in a catch-22? Because if he tries to contact the kids, he's going to be in violation of the OFP. And yet, if he doesn't try to contact the kids, that's used against him in his TPR trial. I
absolutely agree with that point. And that's that point actually made in the footnote of my brief. I don't recall on what page. One of the footnotes indicates that he's put in a position of either, one, violating the law by having contact with the child, and essentially being told that he could be a termination of parental rights because he's violating the law, or two, not having contact with the child. And it's kind of a lose-lose situation for him. He didn't really have a good option at that point.
And when your client was convicted of first-degree burglary, sentenced to 39 months in prison, but that was stayed, do you know when he's going to be released?
Yes, I looked it up this morning. He's currently in the CIP program in Togo. Expected out date is July 13th of this year, so likely within a month or two after the court's order gets issued here, he'll be released. So he's doing what he needs to do. He's successfully doing very well in the CIP program. I grabbed that information in case the court wanted to know. I know it's not part of the record, but I think that is important information. He's not going to be sitting in a cell for the next 3-4 years. We're looking at a matter of a couple months until he's out.
Really part of our consideration, but what do you think would be a reasonable case plan for your client?
Well, he's incarcerated. If you're talking about for now or what would have been?
So he has chemical health issues.
Yes, absolutely. Rule 25 can be done and is regularly done in the jail and or in the prison system.
And hopefully he's chemical free, hopefully, at this point.
I would assume so.
And maybe some domestic violence programming?
Yeah, and I would think that a lot of the jails also offer mental health services. There's no indication here that he has any mental health needs, but really what parent couldn't benefit from seeing some kind of counselor or therapist, especially when they regularly come into the jail setting and or prison setting? We see that on a regular basis. A lot of my clients, I'm a part-time public defender, so I see a lot of clients who are in the jail, and they regularly get some kind of Rule 25, some jails offer treatment. The jails, one secure and fixed on an area, don't. But they can at least get the assessment done to see what kind of needs to be done. They can have counselor therapist who comes in, talk to them. They do parenting classes in the jail and or prison. There's a lot of different things that can be done while people are incarcerated and should have been done in this case. There's a number of statements by Judge Dahl in this case, or determinations, basically saying he failed to attend the hearings and he should have come, he should have challenged the OFP, he should have been more present at the hearings, but he's incarcerated at that point. He can't attend hearings on his own. He testified that he wanted to come to the hearings and even had the jailers call over to the sheriff's department in Big Sound asking to be transported, but he was denied. Of course, he didn't ask for a writ, but without an attorney, he wouldn't have known the language to ask. He wouldn't have known to ask the court for that district court order a writ, but that wasn't done. There are a couple other points in my brief. I see my time is almost up. I don't want to get through all those. Like I said, the main issue here are the efforts and the case plan, and we kind of covered those pretty good here. If the court has any more questions, I'll gladly answer those. But the other points are my brief. I just want to state that I believe the court was improper or was wrong or clearly erroneous on finding that my client abandoned the child. One of the things needs to be attempted during one of the two ways to find abandonment is attempting to facilitate contact. That clearly didn't happen here. In order to facilitate contact, you must first have contact with the parent. And then there's also no fairly correct conditions of the out-of-home placement. We don't know what the conditions were for my client. He wasn't the person who led towards the TPR, and they didn't ever help alleviating potential conditions that could have arisen. And also, the neglected and in foster care, that requires reasonable efforts. And I believe that was not present here, and the order of the district court finding that there were reasonable efforts and a case plan is clearly erroneous. I'd ask this court to overturn the termination of parental rights.
Thank you very much. We'll have our decision out within the statutory time frame. And we are in recess then.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.